Florida State Big Ten bound, or are we destined for the SEC? We're going to talk about that on today's show after some new rumors have broke that we're going to dive into why this makes sense for the Big Ten, why it makes sense for Florida State, but what about the SEC? And then, Michael, the final renderings of Doak are starting to come out. There's been some new announcements about some new upgrades. So we're going to share our thoughts on the facility upgrades around Tallahassee, kind of look at some of the pictures here for those of you watching on YouTube, and then we're going to share our personal thoughts on how we feel about these and what it's going to look like for 2025 as things are supposed to be on schedule done by the time the Alabama game kicks off. And then we have a couple of spring camp updates as football is happening right now. Of course, we know that practice is closed, so we just get some tidbits here, but we want to give you some injury updates on some guys that have been ruled out. So that will kind of tail up the end of the show here, but excited to get into this one. It is an all football talk. Well, kind of some conference realignment, too. You know, just when you thought this was gone and buried with the lawsuits and stuff being over, Michael, it's back again. But this is still an interesting conversation, and it seems like there might be some rumors of some movement, some things kicking up in the background. So a lot to talk about today. Excited to get into it. But before we do that, how are you, my friend? And thanks for joining me for another conversation about some realignment, man. It's just it's the thing that won't go away, right?
It's the thing that won't go away. Listen, Mike Norvell can shut us out of practice, but he can't shut us out of realignment. How about that? Right. No, it's good to be here. And yeah, of course, it's exciting, you know, to finally get some news, even if it's scuttlebutt or scoop, whichever it is. It's good to get some news, some movement, the things that they're talking about. And hopefully we'll begin to see some of that fruition. But I can't wait to get into this conversation.
Yeah, so let's start there, right? Is FSU Big Ten bound? And that's the thing, that's the topic that has kind of made waves this week. And you guys know I typically don't name drop on this show out of a professional courtesy. We talked about that in one of the last episodes. But I'm going to name drop in this one. So that way, if things go awry and things are wrong and sources are incorrect, you don't come flaming us, right? This comes from a show put out by War Chant, headed up by Gene Williams and some of the things he knows. And Gene's been doing this for a really long time. I don't think he's out here to mislead anybody. So you can go check that out on their channel to kind of get the premise of what he's talking about. But we're going to cover what he said in that show and some of the things that he's hearing. And so that's kind of what today is based off of, right? And so that's where this is coming from. So again, don't flame us in the comments. We're sharing our personal take on it and some of the things that they've said. So basically, in a nutshell, and I'll let you follow up on this because I know you watched the episode too. Basically, in a nutshell, what Gene is saying here is that obviously now let me back this up real quick. What Gene is saying is not something that is new. This is not some like novel concept that come out of anywhere. Matter of fact, I know right after the lawsuits were settled, that same week, I talked about this on the Renegade Report with my friend George, with Rohan Law, with Vince from Garnet and Old. We all talked about this on that Friday show. So this is not anything new about Florida State leaving the ACC earlier than 2030 and potentially going to the Big Ten. This is something that's been hypothesized for a long time now. There's also the fact that at the end of the day, guys, no matter, I'm sure Gene has sources all over the country. He's been doing this for 20, 30 years. They've partnered, you know, Cameron worked for ESPN and stuff like that back in the day with the things that they talk about. So I'm sure they have sources, but at the end of the day, unless you're sitting in the Fox Network office and the school president's office, nobody really knows. This is still just kind of guesswork, right? So I just want to get those two things out there first. But from the sources that he has, he's kind of mentioned that he believes that the Big Ten has offered Florida State, because now that you've got out from under the litigation, these kind of conversations can be had. This is something that you could not openly discuss, especially, well, technically you're not supposed to discuss anyway, but especially under litigation, you could not have these conversations. And so now these kind of backdoor dealings may be underway. He thinks that it's going to be the Big Ten sooner than later, but where does the SEC come in to counter offer this? And so that's kind of the premise of what their show was about, that things are aligning for FSU to end up in the Big Ten sooner than 2030. But the kind of the unknown in the room is what the SEC is going to do kind of in rebuttal to the Big Ten's move here. And so as we go through this, we're going to talk about this from the Big Ten's perspective, from Florida State's perspective and from the SEC perspective. So before we open that part of the conversation up, Michael, just make sure I didn't miss anything on what the premise of the conversation is.
Yeah, no, basically you covered it. You got it exactly right. This is not new information. This information was even kind of out there roaming around before the lawsuits got settled. If we want to be absolutely accurate in this, is that, yeah, this stuff was already floating around the rumor mill sphere for a while now. And so what the premise and what Gene was getting at is basically now there's a little bit what he's hearing, and you have to understand, Gene's been doing warchant.com for a long time, since the early 90s, but also he's a lawyer. He's been around that program. He has really high connections into the booster, not boosters, the high booster level, but also the board of trustees. He has high connections there. So this information, while it might not be completely fully fleshed out, it's not coming from inaccurate source, at least. And he wouldn't put this out there. You know, I've been, I'm assuming he wouldn't put this out there unless it was something that was very accurate. And so the information, the premise is that there is more movement, there's more concrete to the scuttlebutt that's been out there for a while now.
Yeah. And I mean, to be fair, there's a lot of people that just make stuff up, right?
Right.
Florida State's going to the Big Ten in 2025 and all this type of stuff. And look, man, a broken clock can be right twice a day. You just keep saying the same thing over and over. Eventually it's going to be right. And it's really not a hard thing to get right or wrong, because when Florida State sued to leave the ACC, there was only two options that were ever going to be on the table. That's the Big Ten or the SEC. Now they're squeezing more money out of the ACC. So if you had to stay, it's a more tenable situation, but there was only ever going to be two options. So it's pretty easy to pick one of two and end up landing on the right square there. But I think when you talk about them leaving, now that the lawsuits have been settled, as we know, we've talked about this in past shows, it has opened the pathway for you to leave the ACC and to get into one of those other conferences sooner than later. We know that the Grant of Rights is no longer ironclad. That iron rusted and fell apart. And so you can get out by 2030. Now, we know there's the buyout fee of what I think is $165 million. It comes down $18 million a year. Then it's going to be $75 million by 2030. The ACC won in this a little bit because they got the longevity of ESPN picking up that extension through 2036. They're going to get a pile of cash when these teams do hit the door. And so I think it's no coincidence that once you saw the ACC kind of get their lifespan extended, then they allowed the door to be open for teams to leave, because they're like, look, we're not going to die off if the court breaks the wall and everybody just leaves, the dam busts and everybody leaves.
Right.
And so that's why they let this path be open. And we've said this from the beginning here on Plant the Spear. This has always been a numbers game. Before the lawsuit was settled, this numbers game never made sense. Not when it was going to cost you $500 to $700 million to leave. But now that you have that kind of all-in price of $165 million, which declines every single year that you remain in the ACC, you're also making more money in the ACC while you wait for that number to get to where you want it to be. Once this number makes sense, and if you're already operating at a deficit, operating like depending on what the Big Ten is going to give you, and that was one thing that Gene talked about, he thinks you're going to get more than a half share like Oregon and Washington got. The thing to remember with the Big Ten versus the SEC is the SEC actually has the pro rata, whatever you want to call it, where you will come in as a full share member right away.
That's
so it would be more revenue in the short term, but the Big Ten is going to be more revenue in the long term, because right now they are outpacing the SEC for the long term contracts. The Big Ten has escalators, so they can make room for a new team, but you're not automatically coming in at a full share.
No.
So I think where you're at is Florida State's going to have to negotiate to what size share are you going to give us? Are you going to help us with this buyout at all? Because, you know, they help Maryland out. So, I mean, if they're willing to basically front some cash up to help get the property that they want, I'm sure they're willing to do that, right?
Right.
And so if those numbers start to make sense with the exit penalty for Florida State versus what you're making now, knowing that you're securing your long-term future, once those numbers make sense, Florida State is in good mind and financial sound decisions to go ahead and make that move.
That's right.
And, you know, we'll talk about like where we think they're going to end up, but I know 2030 is when the Big Ten comes back to the negotiating table. The SEC is a little bit farther down the road there. Florida State wants out sooner than later, right?
That's right.
So really, the sooner you can get out, the better. That's right. We all know that.
Right.
I do think that it's not going to be like next year or maybe even the year after. I think you're probably looking 27, 28. But I do think that Florida State would probably, and the Big Ten would probably want Florida State intact in that conference before they come back to the negotiating table with Fox, because that gives you an opportunity to lay all your chips on the table. You're not like, okay, well, what if we had Florida State and then we end up in the SEC?
That's right.
So I think that does give you an advantage there when you come to the bargaining table to already have all your chips in your hand that you can lay on the table at once. So that's kind of what I'm looking at, man. It's a numbers game. When it makes sense, the move will happen now that the path has been laid. And I think it's going to happen before 2030 because you want your chips in tow before that negotiation table, that conversation happens.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think Florida State's going to be out before 2026. They'd have to let the ACC know by what, this August, right?
August 15th. Yeah.
Yeah. August 15th. Yeah. I don't think so. I think you're right. I think that 2027 date is probably way more accurate, but, you know, this, as you said, this sorely depends on two factors. The first factor is what kind of shares you mentioned they could get from the Big Ten. You know, Gene put out there, and I've read some other stuff from some other people that Florida State feels confident that they're at least right now at a 3/4 of a share. They feel good about that, which is what has kind of, you know, stirred up this scoop, that scuttlebutt that we're talking about. So if they're already at a 3/4 share, and they're feeling good about that, then they have to just weigh, like you said, they have to weigh, do we pay the $165 million now and get out, get a 3/4 share? And that $165 million, remember, No Nation, that is not like you have to pay that right now up front.
Right.
That is paid over future earnings over years. I mean, years. They could literally make that payment last 99 years, right?
Yeah. Like, I give you $1 a month. Like,
exactly.
Like a hospital bill.
Exactly.
Call collections. What you gonna do? Yeah, exactly.
So like they can make that last over years. And so it's not like they're gonna be siphoning cash from Florida State if they leave next year. But they have to weigh, does that 3/4 share add a benefit to us getting out now? Which, I mean, a lot of us FSU fans, including myself, would argue yes, for sure, because it helps in recruiting. It's going to help financially already. You're going to see a big windfall from the fans of saying, oh my gosh, this is happening. I want to give. Even though we've coming off a 2-10 season, it's momentum. It feels good. It invites good spirit. So there is a lot riding on, if you make that decision now, it's going to be beneficial. But also, as you mentioned, if you make that decision a little bit later, so like if you're looking at the 27, 28 year, then you save some of that exit fee money that can help you in that transition. Then what I will also say too is the SEC is also a key player here. And here's why I think long-term, this is more of a benefit for the Big Ten than it is the SEC. Because the SEC already has the market schools that it has in the market. So adding FSU adds to the overall value of the SEC, but not to the overall brand of the SEC, if that makes sense.
The footprint.
The footprint is going to be the same. The market value of FSU going to SEC increases for sure. It's another big brand name. It's an iconic brand, all those things. But it doesn't really add like that gravitas to the SEC.
Right.
Florida State going to the Big Ten is a whole different story. Not only does it add to the gravitas, it's another national championship winning program. It's the iconic brand. But as we've talked about before, it's a plant of a flag in the southern region for the Big Ten. Why is that important? Because the Big Ten and Fox has this aspiration of being a national conference. And what that's going to do, as you mentioned, Jesse, the Big Ten already has a leeway, a head start in the how much money is coming in over the SEC. Now that gap is projected to close a little bit by 2030, especially when the contracts renew. But if you can get Florida State in here, well, now you can advertise much more. You can, Chick-fil-A can be advertised in Big Ten country now, as it's not as much, because really the SEC kind of owns the Chick-fil-A market with all of its southern regions. Man, Chick-fil-A is a huge advertiser. And if you're going to be advertising Big Ten schools, Ohio State, Michigan, Rutgers, all Northwestern, Minnesota with Chick-fil-A, That's a huge market now. I mean, that's a national market. That's going to help the Big Ten and Fox outpace ESPN by huge margins. And then you just think about the windfall of that. What does that mean at the next contract negotiations for Florida State? And so I think, you know, those are why Florida State right now and Fox and the Big Ten are saying, under the cloud of we're not interested in doing anything right now, they're saying, gosh, we got an opportunity now.
Yeah.
That DC has basically lost this lawsuit, and Florida State is now really available. They're technically a free agent, honestly, if you look at it.
Yeah, I think that's great points. And, you know, when you think to Oregon and Washington, the fact that they came in as partial share members, and if my memory serves me correct, they get about $30 million a year with a $1 million escalator. So technically, with the new incentives, you're going to be making more money in the ACC than they will be making in the Big Ten. I mean, you're going to be lagging in the short term. And so you don't really want to kneecap yourself by just being like, look, we got to get out of here right now. And then you're going to end up paying $150, $140 million or whatever, depending on how many years you stay to get out and make less money. So the deal's got to make sense for you. And again, that could come in the Big Ten offering you some help with that buyout.
That's right.
With some things like that. But yes, I do think whenever it makes sense, you will leave. And I think that you brought up a good point. Like the SEC pretty much already has that Southeastern market cornered. You are not adding. That's more of a defensive move than an offensive move for that conference. You know, you already have massive brands like Georgia, Alabama, Texas, Florida in there already. But you can give the Big Ten something that they don't have. And that is a flag in that Southeastern market. That's another really big football brand. Because really, if you think about it, you come into the SEC, you're probably, and look, I love Florida State. I'm going to be always pie in the sky for us.
Just so you know, remember it was fourth.
Yeah. You're probably fourth or fifth brand there, right? Yeah. And in the Big Ten, you're probably competing for around second or I'd say third, right? You're probably behind Ohio State, Michigan. You're right there with Penn State, right?
Yeah.
And so I think that is, like you said, it would mean more to the Big Ten to get Florida State than it would the SEC, right? They're just kind of doing that from a defensive move. But again, like you talked about with the national conference, and that does matter to the Big Ten. I mean, think about the intro commercial that they use for all of their games where they have the thing that goes, and it's a really cool commercial. I love it, where they show all the schools all around the country and they tout that national conference, and there's a part of the country that they're missing. You know what I mean? And so this would be big. And like you talked about with the advertising opportunities, and keep in mind that the TV networks in the end game of all of this realignment, they're the puppet masters.
Yeah,
they're the ones that drive all of this, not the university presidents and all that stuff. So it's about revenue. It's about eyes on TV sets. And Florida State is one that brings the eyes to the TV sets. I mean, if you think about it, you know, Florida State is, we've talked about this before, right? I still think that Notre Dame is and always will be the apple of the Big Ten's eye. Oh, yes,
absolutely.
But that apple is poisoned, right? Like Adam and Eve, man, that apple is poisoned. They are not just going to give up easily because I think last year was a perfect example, right? You look at the money that Notre Dame made from the playoffs because they didn't have to share anything.
Nope.
You look at kind of the built-in protectors for Notre Dame because of who they are as a brand historically with the playoffs. You know, you kind of always got to have that Notre Dame factor in there, that protection plan for them. They're not in a position. The only way you're ever going to be able to force Notre Dame really to join a conference is to tell them we're not going to schedule you, period. And then, you know, if the ACC becomes basically a glorified G5, and you now have to start scheduling, you can only schedule Pitt and, you know, all these other teams. You're not going to be able to get Notre Dame to join that conference until you can physically force their hand.
Right.
But when you talk about Notre Dame being the apple of their eye, if you can't get them, Michael, what is the next biggest brand that's available in conference realignment to grab? And this again, like, guys, when you look at we've gone through this before, so feel free to go double check numbers and all this type of stuff. We've talked about this 100 times before. There's Florida State. There's Clemson, there's UNC, the ones that are pretty much available up for grabs. And UNC is nowhere near Florida State in football. You can double check the numbers on that. Clemson is pretty close to FSU in football. I know they've been more successful. That's fine. But when you look at athletic department spending, the academics and all that stuff, Florida State is the belle of the ball right now.
Correct.
And so if you can't get Notre Dame, then Florida State's your next best bet.
Exactly.
And are you going to want to wait, or are you just going to want to go ahead and try and lock them up before the SEC makes that defensive move? You know, and I'll throw it back to you in just a second. But what I was going to say is, you know, when you talk about those other brands, Clemson seems like a better fit in the SEC because, and I'm not trashing Clemson's academics, it's not where Florida State is currently right now. But you look at that, and then it's already been made known that the SEC, the apple of their eye, is UNC for reason. I mean, maybe basketball, you know, maybe the Bill Belichick thing. Football is not even that big of a deal there. And then there is do they have to take NC State? And then if they don't have to, because that's been rumored that that's kind of through the legal system, the governmental system there, that if you take one, you got to take the other. If they don't have to take NC State, well, what about UVA? UVA is that other massive athletic department. Just, I know they're not great at football, but the athletics as a whole, it's a massive department, just like UNC. So what if they get UNC and they have to take NC State? Is there even an appetite for the SEC to kind of take Florida State? And so I think one thing that we were talking about before the show is there could be some negotiations between two, right? I think people always talk about the Big Ten and the SEC are like, we're at odds ends. We're ready to fight. And they are competing powers.
Yeah,
I get that. But there could be like, all right, you guys, we know they're negotiating these playoffs. They're negotiating to play each other, scheduling alliances. So they talk. They're in the same room. They do the negotiations. All right, you guys take Florida State. We'll give it to you. Because chances are, if the SEC is not going to take everybody, right? You're not going to get Florida State. You're not going to get Clemson and UNC and UVA and NC State. The Big Ten is going to end up with somebody in the South, right? Whether that be Miami, if they have to go to option number 2 or 3 or 4 or 5, whatever, they're going to get that market some way, somehow, if they truly want it.
Yeah.
So there could be some negotiations like, all right, you guys want UNC, you get UNC. We want Florida State, we take Florida State. And so that's something that I think is very interesting there, you know, because again, when you talk about from TV revenues and all that type of stuff, Florida State still is the belle of the ball. And the last thing I'll throw it to you that I wanted to talk about here with Florida State being the belle of the ball is Florida State has consistently held their own. They've led the ACC in TV metrics, and they've been neck and neck with the Big Ten and the SEC in most instances, not all. But the biggest thing that you have to remember is that's been against primarily ACC competition, which is a boat anchor for viewership.
That's right.
You look back to the game against LSU. You look back to the games against, you know, look Notre at this Dame. Alabama game coming up.
Yeah.
Right, exactly. These, if you replace Florida State's schedule with a Big Ten or an SEC schedule, and you add Ohio State and Michigan or Oregon or Washington and all that every single year, you're going to see a massive jump in these TV numbers. You're going to see a massive jump in attendance. Bigger opponents equal bigger numbers. And these networks know that.
Oh, yeah.
They know there is already gold in that mine, but there is a lot of untapped potential by swapping that schedule for one of their own against these big brands. That's why the ACC is leveraging Notre Dame.
That's right.
Because they know what those matchups do for you. So that's the one point that I wanted to say.
Yeah, no, I agree with that totally. And I just wanted to go back to that Notre Dame point real quick. Yeah, the Big Ten, I mean, it has been known throughout. If you follow if you have any semblance of college football knowledge, you know that the Big Ten they have a perpetual hold on a place for the Notre Dame. As soon as Notre Dame say yes, they're automatically in at a full share. But if you're Notre Dame, why would you go to the Big Ten when you literally have a whole network and not a streaming network, not a network that you have to get on cable, but a network that is on your rabbit ears, if you remember that, what they call rabbit ears, right? That everybody can get it. And Notre
Dame, they had last year. I was going to say, that's the last time Notre Dame was relevant when they were playing on rabbit ears, but I forgot they had last year.
They had last year. But you're on rabbit ears. Everybody gets access to it. I saw a projection that Notre Dame is scheduled to make over time. They're going to get $80 million just by themselves, and they ain't got to share it, right? I think the only way to go to your point is the two ways that you can get Notre Dame to finally say, okay, we're going to not be independent anymore. I think number one, you stop scheduling. Number two, you say you have to be a conference champion to get into the playoff. Like that. I mean, that's the only two ways you're going to get them to finally commit. Or when the money becomes so astronomically ridiculous in the conference and they get far behind. So maybe there's three ways. But other than that, if you're the Big Ten, absolutely. You're saying, okay, if I can't get Notre Dame, what's the next best school out there? And listen, we're diehard Florida State fans. We think Florida State's the greatest, but we're realists too. We know Notre Dame is the top brand available right now in college football that's not connected to a conference. What's the next best brand that could be? Florida State University. It has outpaced even Clemson. It has outpaced Clemson. Even though Clemson has been really good for the last several years, Florida State still has done well. I mean, think about this. Think about this. Since the national championship, it's so wild. Florida State is 50-50 on winning seasons. We've had just as many losing seasons as we've had winning seasons. And even during that time frame, Florida State has still been the number one iconic brand in the ACC and would be fourth among the SEC and third among the Big Ten.
Yeah. I mean, it's obviously there, right? And the network execs know that. People can argue with it if they want. We've gone through the numbers a lot. And like you talked about, man, the other big thing is that southern market. I mean, Florida is the third most populated state in the United States, and the fourth is New York, and they don't really care about football.
They don't really care.
Well, you know, they got NFL.
Got Rutgers. Yeah.
Shout out Jameis to the Giants.
That's right.
But, you know, they don't really care about football like they do in the South. And so I think that is important. Something else that I thought I saw that was an interesting point that maybe doesn't get a lot of light, I saw this on Twitter. I can't remember his name or else I'd give him credit for it. But something that I thought was interesting was, you know, if they get that school down south in Florida, it provides them, the Big Ten, a warmer climate for early or for like those fall primetime night games. Because, you know, they have to do that big noon kickoff. And I know that you know, night games they still happen in the Big Ten. Those folks are built for cold weather. Shout out to you. I'm not. I got Southern blood.
Amen, brother.
I can't do that. But I think you would give them a chance to bring like that Ohio State, that Oregon, that Michigan down here to Florida, where you can have that prime time night slot no matter the time of the year.
Imagine Ohio State and Doak Campbell at 7 p.m.
Ooh. Right. Like, those are going to be huge. So I think those are the opportunities. Another thing that maybe doesn't get talked about, that you would have that. You know, I mean, you could maybe get one more Southern team like we talked about, like a Miami, even if you had to go down the list or whatever. But, you know, when you look
way
at the
down
home
the list.
Right, way down there. when you get the home game experience and the TV numbers, like, yeah, you have a lot of Big Ten alumni and retirees in the South, like Ohio State and all that. There's a lot, you know, everybody moves from Ohio to Florida. They retire down here. And I get that. But Michael, you know, you can probably attest to this too. As someone who, like myself, who is primarily raised in the South, like Southern born and raised people, we just don't care about Big Ten football. Like
we do not.
Right. Like, man, I'm not going to throw any shade that Big Ten or Ohio State, Michigan is, you know, the game. It is one of the top three rivalries in all of college football. I don't care, man. Like, I mean, it's cool. It's great. I love watching it when it's on. But like, you know, that Notre Dame Ohio State national championship or whatever is kind of a yawn or whatever. Like, it's not the same as even because when you go to work, man, how many Ohio State fans are you talking trash to versus how many Alabama or Florida or Georgia fans? Right. And so I think if you get FSU in the Big Ten, it would give the Big Ten vested interest in the Southern fan base too. That's the big thing. Like, not just in that Southern market, but now I do pay attention to Ohio State.
Correct.
Now I do care about Michigan and Oregon. Correct. Where right now, unless we meet them in the playoffs,
correct,
doesn't mean anything to me, really.
Right. And like, I don't mean to be pompous. I don't mean to be prideful. I'm not saying our Southern fan base hubris is astronomical, but the Southern market is the best collection of football fans in the country. I'm just
especially
being
for
honest.
College.
Especially for college, right?
Yeah.
I mean, listen, you know, Jesse, I lived out west. I lived out in California, right? I lived in the Midwest. I lived in Big Ten country in Indiana. And I'm just telling you, there are great football fans in the West and in the Midwest and all like that. There is no better football fan than the Southern region of the United States. We love our college football. Like, diehard, we'll divorce people. We'll kick you out of our family. We'll talk to you for years. And, you know, we just love our college football. And if you are the Big Ten and you can get a flag planted here in the state and the Southern region, well, guess what? Now we're going to care about Ohio State, Michigan. Now we're going to care about Michigan, Penn State. Now we're going to care about Ohio State, Penn State. Because why? It's in our region, and they're coming here, and they're trying to steal our players. Yeah.
Yeah, 100%. I agree with that. And that, again, like you said, that's not a dig at Northern fans or anything like that. I know they're diehards, and they love their – I've watched some videos where people are walking around, like, the Michigan-Ohio State game, filming it, and, like, if it's at Columbus, they're in Michigan gear, and it's – They're not. Yeah, it's pretty rough. But, you know, again, it's just like I said, man, like I don't think twice about Ohio State during the season. But, you know, I'm watching what LSU does on Saturday. I'm watching what Georgia does on a Saturday just because of the regionality aspect.
That's right.
And we'll talk about that later when we talk about the SEC. I think the other thing that's important to consider here is the academics at FSU are on the rise. It feels like they are putting themselves in position to be aligned with the Big Ten schools. We know TV draws the big numbers. That's what's the puppet master in all this. But we know that the Big Ten as a conference and university presidents, they do value academics. They've said that before. AAU has always been a thing that's been in the conversation. Now, Tony Petitti, the Big Ten commissioner, has said that it is not a hard line in the sand. It's just very heavily valued. Nebraska doesn't have it. They had it when they got in. They lost it. So I believe you would be the first one to be added that was not an AAU school. But, you know, shout out to this administration and President McCullough. They have done a great job with Florida State's academics. Like, no, they aren't AAU, but I was looking it up before the show, and of the public universities, because there's some private ones in there too that aren't ranked in this, but per the U.S. News report on public university rankings, you would be ranked above six other institutions in the Big Ten. So you're kind of middle of the road in academics as a non-AAU school. And I think the other thing that is kind of telling here that's happened over the last week or two is Florida State, there's been a lot of reports that they are trying to acquire TMH, Tallahassee Memorial Health. They're already expanding their healthcare footprint into the panhandle with a new acute care hospital that is planning and awaiting approval in Panama City. For those of you watching on YouTube, I'll throw a picture of it here that Florida State put out themselves. I mean, this is a massive facility, 180 beds is what they're talking about. And I work in healthcare, so I'm a little bit interested in that type of stuff. But obviously, this would be a teaching high school or hospital that's tied to their medical school, just like UF and Shands. They have that relationship there. So that's gonna elevate your research, your expenditures there that you're doing. And then it is in partnership with TMH, which in a lot of these healthcare mergers, once you start working together, you can kind of grease the wheels to FSU kind of moving into that territory. And you know, there was a quote from President McCullough that wrote to the board of, I think it's the commissioners in Tallahassee or Leon County, says, "I am writing to express Florida State University's interest in the potential establishment of an academic medical center in Tallahassee, which is one of the several options included in the recent informational agenda item for the upcoming March 26th City Commission meeting." Basically, we want TMH.
We coming.
we're trying to build our academic profile. And so I think these moves that they're making, you know, Florida State, and again, I know it's not up to them whether they get AAU status or not. They can apply. They can get approved. They have not, you know, kind of South Florida kind of stole the thunder out from them getting the last one there where you felt like maybe Florida State should have. But when you look at what they're investing in their academics and what they're doing with this expansion. And the reason, or, you know, they've publicly stated they hope to be AAU by 2027, 2028 in that range. Again, that all aligns with what Big Ten schools want. And so I think the other thing too, and you know, to kick it back to you for some final thoughts on the from the Big Ten's perspective, is just look at the facility investments, right? Yeah. Florida State's built that football-only facility. They're upgrading Doak Campbell Stadium to be one of the premier venues. And we're going to talk about Doak's renovations here later, one of the premier venues in college football. They're showing that they are willing to make a massive investment in their athletics program.
That's right.
So they are making themselves look marketable to either one of these conferences, but the things they are doing, the moves align more with the Big Ten. Now, obviously, the biggest thing you got to do is win on the field, right?
That's
because
right.
you got to get back to being competitive, not That's just right. marketable, but competitive. But even in last year when we were terrible, we were still one of the top five brands in the ACC as far as viewership. You were still getting all of the primetime night game slots.
That's right.
And so, yeah, man, I think from a Big Ten perspective, it makes great sense to add Florida State before someone takes them out from underneath you.
Yeah, absolutely. From a Big Ten perspective, it's a no-brainer. It's a no-brainer. And like you said, everything that Florida State's been doing lends homage to what a Big Ten school would be doing and looking like, with the hospital, the research, the AAU stuff. You know, like you just quoted the U.S. News ranking. According to the U.S. News ranking, Florida State is a top 25 public university. Top 25 public university. Yeah. right? They're in the top 60 of the of universities in general with the private schools and all like that in there. I mean, so it's a really good academic school. And so that fits the Big Ten model. Big Ten's like, yeah, we like that, right? You see the updates with the hospital and the purchasing and the wanting to get more of the research dollars. Big Ten says, yeah, we like that too. What the Big Ten likes also more is that the fact that you are an iconic brand, that you have a market share that is really huge, that you have national championships, you have NFL prestige, you have legacy, and you've done more with less.
Yeah.
You're the youngest blue blood in the country. And I call Florida State football a blue blood. You're the youngest blue blood in the country, right? You have more national titles than some schools that have been around for hundreds of years. Yes, that's attractive to the Big Ten as well. And so, yeah, I could totally see from the Big Ten's perspective, Florida State is the one. If we can't get Notre Dame, it's got to be Florida State. And even if we, you know, Jesse, I would even argue, and I'll throw this back to you, I would even argue, even if they got Notre Dame, they still want a Southern market school, and Florida State would be the one they want.
Yeah, I think if the Big Ten were to get Florida State and Notre Dame, they would be closed for business at that point. You've got what you want, and you don't need any more. Now, I personally don't consider Florida State a blue blood because of our age.
Yeah.
But I think we have blue blood tendencies, right?
Yeah.
At least I'll say that. But let's switch gears and let's talk about what this means for FSU. And we'll pick up the pace a little bit so we don't run you too long here. You know, for FSU, I think obviously the one big attraction outside of sports is academics, right? If you were, because AAU may not be a hard line in the sand, but academics are very heavily considered, right? They're not just going to let in anybody. If AAU is obtained in the future, that could mean billions with a B in dollars in research funding for the university, as well as big partnerships with the other AAU schools. The academics is important for the university itself. Like, if you care about more than just the football team, the Big Ten makes more sense, right? Yeah. It's better for the university as a whole. But when you talk about sports, man, football membership would bring a significant rise in revenue immediately once you get that full share membership. You get bigger matchups with more playoff cachet than you know, with the more AQ bids and more money from the playoffs split, especially I would imagine once the ACC loses the only two teams that have ever made the playoffs in their conference, that's what's going to get even more lopsided towards those Power Two conferences. You want to be at the big boy table in case they throw that weight around and they start running things, you know, the way they want. And so obviously you're going to get that. That's going to make, you know, and keep in mind, man, I know the SEC kind of dominates the football market, but the Big Ten has won the last two national championships.
That's
so
right.
They're on the come up. And so I think, you know, from a football only perspective, the advantages are clear, right? The revenue, the competition level, the being at the, having that negotiator, that big brother behind your back when you, it's like working for the union. You know what I mean? Like the ACC is just kind of getting slapped around. The Big Ten and the SEC is like, hey, hold up now. This is what's going to happen and you're going to like it. and so that's one of the advantages right there. You also get the recruiting, right? I mean, you're still going to recruit the Southeast. That's still your primary area. But now you don't have to do it with an ACC logo attached to
Right.
Now you can do it with that Big Ten logo and say, look, we get four playoff spots. We're competing against Ohio State.
That's
you know, hey, recruit, will you want to come to a visit on the when we play Michigan or Oregon? Welcome to the Wake Forest game or whatever. Like, it's going to be bigger for you,
that's
you know?
Right.
And maybe, Michael, you can even pull some of that Midwest beef for the trenches. Like,
oh, come on now.
Maybe now you can go bring Iowa's offensive line down to Florida State.
Don't tease me like that.
Because that's what I really want out of the Big Ten is some of them Big Ten offensive linemen. I think that's the best part here. So, yeah, man, I think that's the biggest part, really, when you look at football. The advantages are obvious, right?
Yeah.
But it also gives you more money in your pool for the other sports. Like, we just saw where you had to pay your basketball coach around $2 million because you have to put all your eggs into the football basket because you don't make the money that the other schools make. You know, when we talked about Dennis Gates being a name that was involved at Florida State, Missouri's paying him $4 million, twice as much as you're paying. Who the heck is Missouri? They're nobody special, but they got that SEC money, so
that's
they
right.
can afford to do that. You know, baseball, I think, would be the one sport where you would take the biggest hit.
Yeah.
Because Big Ten baseball is not good.
Not good at all.
But at the same time, think about this. What if the ACC does kind of fall apart and you lose Clemson, you lose Florida State, you lose UNC? That's three of your top brands right there in baseball. So now the ACC baseball just took a hit. So that's big. I mean, again, like, you, even when you come to the women's sports, like, you were able to keep Lonnie Alameda, but at some point someone's going to come calling, right? Yeah. Taniah Latson is hitting the portal to test the waters. You ain't got money to pay a women's basketball player. No offense to the women's sports. We love them.
Yeah.
But, like, you got to put it all towards football. If you have more money in the pot, if you're making $50 million more a year, then you can afford to do those things, right? And so I think the advantages for the Big Ten we've laid out, but the advantages for FSU are clear, man. It's not only just an academics. It's a prestige. It's a financial boost. It's all those things. And so that's why Florida State needs to make a move to one or the other sooner than later. But it feels like, man, the Big Ten would just be a great move for not only sports, but the university too.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I absolutely agree. I think in the long-term way that, you know, it could be a huge boost to the brand, huge boost to the economic value of Florida State, huge boost to the athletic program, you know, gives you more opportunities to do more things. And again, in an era in which universities are having to decide if they're going to have to cut programs because of funding, because of the new house settlement, what it's going to require. You know, you can't, you have an escalating $20 million that's supposed to grow every year over time. You know, you can't pay everybody. So what does that mean? You got to add more scholarships to football now. You know, basically the walk-on type player is going to be almost obsolete. There's so much riding on this that, yeah, being able to get to a conference that's going to be able to give you a boon in that, where you can go out and hire a $4 million coach, right? That you can compete, you know, with the other schools of looking at coaches and can keep your best coaches and get the best players. Absolutely. There's massive benefit to that right now being in the ACC doesn't provide you. It doesn't give you that ability to do so. And every ACC school, regardless of where they are in the totem pole, knows that. They know that. Yep. And, you know, and it's only because they're not Florida State. They're not Clemson, you know, and I would even throw in UNC in there. They're not them. And so they are trying to hold on to the yesteryear of what this could be, because they know that once those three schools split, the ACC is basically a G5. That's basically what it becomes.
Yeah, and I think that's why they waited to settle till after that ESPN agreement was picked up, and they'll get some cash to help them out, but they're going to have to – it's not going to be the same. And, you know, even the other thing that, you know, you talked about when you talk about the economic boost is I think this is big for the city of Tallahassee too, and Leon County. I think that cannot be something that is ignored, because you think about the big matchups. Like, man, I remember I looked for a hotel for the Florida State-Alabama game before the season – last year, 2024, almost every hotel was already sold out for that Alabama game. Why? Because we already knew the date. That's like, there's a lot of times in the fall, and, you know, Tallahassee hotels are already freaking ridiculous. That's another thing.
A whole other episode.
Like, Florida State, can you start building fan hotels or something? Like, get in that business. Golly. But when you know the date of the games, these things sell out quick. And so you think about the economic boost that you're going to get by having these big brands, these big sold out games coming to Tallahassee versus, you know, we've talked about this before, really outside of maybe some Miami fans or Clemson, none of these ACC teams travel like that.
No.
And so that's a big part to consider too. But, you know, the last part I want to talk about with this whole perspective, Michael, is, but what about the SEC, right? Where do they come into this picture? Again, like we said, I think this is a pure defensive move. If you're talking about what the SEC wants, it's just a, like, you know, can we be bigger than our other brother, right? Can we scoop that Southern market up with the biggest brands before they do? And I think that's kind of their advantage, right? It's not so much that they need Florida State. I think Florida State would, you know, rising tide lifts all ships. So you bring in another big brand, it's going to be something that you can negotiate to get more money in the future. So it would elevate their brand.
Yep.
But maybe not give them as much, like we talked about, value add as you would get out of the Big Ten adding Florida State. But at the same time, I think it just blocks them out from getting in the South. And that's really what you want, or at least that Florida market, because then they're going to have to take Miami, and that's probably not what they want, right?
Right.
But you look at, from our perspective, for the SEC, really, it's a pure sports and regionality play. That's 99% of the reason that you're going into that. And like we said, man, the SEC pays more, significantly more than the ACC. So either one of these you're going to be happy with, right? It's not the ACC. You want in the SEC or the Big Ten. But while it would pay more in the short term than the Big Ten, because you get that full share right away
right
for, you know, until 2030, whenever you make that move, it's not probably going to pay more in the long term. So it's still not really even a pay advantage. I think right. It's just from a sports prestige. I mean, they've won 6 national titles in the CFP era. They just got 13 teams, right? 13 or 14, 14 teams.
14.
14 teams in March Madness. They had 10 in the women's bracket. 10 of the top 25 teams in the D1 baseball top 25 are from the SEC. Oof. Half of them in Omaha last year. It was an ACC-SEC final when they got past the first 3 teams there. 11 of the top 25 in softball are from the SEC. They cornered the sports market. But at the same time, like we've said before, man, when you snap up all the big brands, of course you're
going to. Of course you will.
Exactly. Like, you have all the big brands, of course. Like, people were mad that, like, oh, the SEC got 14 teams in the tournament. They got all the good teams. What do you expect them to have? You know, I mean, the Big Ten has a few and the ACC has a couple, but not really huge there. And so I think that's a big – if you're just like a fan, you're like, man, I don't care about the university and the academics and all that. I just want to go to football games, have fun. You're all about the SEC.
Yep.
I get that. And I also will say that the regionality is great as a fan. And you know, you guys drop in the comments if you're watching on YouTube. Let me know where you want to end up and why. I'd be interested to hear you guys' thoughts. And I've done a poll, and everyone liked the Big Ten, but it was also coming off the snub, so everyone hated ESPN at the time. Yeah. And I'm going to share a thought on that in a second. Man, for me, it's like we talked about before. As a Southern kind of raised fan, right, to me, the SEC brands and the SEC mean more, right, to me. And I guess that's their thing, right? It just means more, whatever.
Yeah, it just means more.
whoops, foot in mouth. But look, I don't love the SEC. I don't want to be in the SEC. All the mouth-breathing fan bases that they got over there. But I live 45 minutes from Williams-Brice Stadium in Columbia. Yeah. I live within 5 hours. We were talking about this the other day.
Yep.
Through text message. I think there's not adding Clemson or UNC or anyone like that. There's about 4 or 5 stadiums within 5 hours of my house, which is driving yep. distance.
Yeah.
The regionality is amazing. I loved that LSU matchup.
Yeah.
I would love to play Auburn again. I'm looking forward to this Alabama matchup. I'm looking forward to playing Georgia. Yes, I would love to play Oregon. I would love to play Ohio State. I would love to play Michigan. I would love to play Penn State in a whiteout. All that stuff's great. We know that. You can fly out there and you can go yeah. one time in your life and be like, woohoo, this is fun. Because the common fan doesn't have the money probably to just jump on a plane every other year and go to right. Oregon and California and all this stuff. You can probably do it once every so often, right? You can drive to SEC games all the time, every right. other year. I don't get excited about Illinois or Minnesota yeah. or yeah. Purdue or Wisconsin or any of those other teams. There's about 4 brands I really get excited for in the Big Ten. The SEC, outside of Vanderbilt, which I would go to because Nashville is a great city, there's not many I wouldn't love to see Florida State play, yeah, right?
Yeah, so
I think from the heart of hearts as a fan, for me, I would rather be playing against SEC competition.
Yeah.
The brain fan in me says I would much rather be in the Big Ten from a Florida State perspective as a whole. And the last thing I'll say when I'll throw it to you is the ESPN factor, right? Because I already know. I watched the comments under the War Chant video and everything. I don't want anything to do with ESPN after what they did to us. Well, guys, tough cookies. Because if you want to be in the playoffs, guess who owns the sole rights to the playoffs?
Boom.
It's ESPN. It's unavoidable. You cannot be in college football and not somehow be involved with ESPN, right?
Right.
So, yes, I get it. You're less involved with them. Maybe that's great. But at the same time, if you're in the SEC, they're not trying to screw you like they would be in the ACC.
That's right.
So ESPN factor aside, because you can't get away from them. Yeah, man, my heart wants the SEC. My head knows that the Big Ten is better.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I mean, from an SEC standpoint, like we talked about earlier, adding Florida State does not add like a huge swoon of like, oh man, this makes the SEC greater now. No, because they've got a lot of great programs in their conference. It does add to their market value, does add to their market share of the regionality there. It's another iconic brand. It's more eyes. Florida State going up against an Alabama, going up against a Florida, going up against an LSU, going up against a Georgia, more often than not a Tennessee, you know, that's going to bring a lot more eyeballs. So yeah, like you said, you know, rising tides, raise each other, whatever the saying is there. But it's really a, like you said, a defensive move for the SEC. It's to help them to not get the Big Ten. It's to help keep those advertising dollars flowing more so towards the SEC as well, especially in that southern region. Also, it gives them more cachet with the playoffs and, you know, all of that stuff as well, for sure. But like you, Jesse, I'm a Southern fan, born and raised here in the southern region, born down in Southwest Florida. Man, what I would give to go to LSU on a Saturday night, Death Valley, yeah. right? What yeah. I would give to go between the plains there, you know, what I'd give to go to Auburn or to Georgia and it be a every other year or every 3 year kind of deal. What I would give to even go to, you know, go to Tennessee. I've been to a Tennessee game before, and let me just tell you, it was when Oregon was ranked number one in the country and they played Tennessee. And Neyland Stadium, it's a dump truck of a stadium, right?
Yes, that
cute throw up orange. But man, them fans are wild and crazy. That is so much better than going to Piscataway, New Jersey, right?
Yeah.
Like, who wants to go to Minnesota or Northwestern? Like, no one wants to do that. There are only three schools that I want to go see in the Big Ten. I want to go to Ohio State to the Horseshoe. I want to go to the Big House, Michigan State, and I want to go to Penn State on a whiteout. That's it. That's all I care about. I've been to USC. I mean, Oregon would be cool, but that, like you said, that's a faraway trip out there. Other than that, I don't really care about them stadiums. But you know what I want to go? LSU. Bryce Williams Stadium. But Bryce Williams for South Carolina. I'd love to go there.
Williams Bryce.
There it is. I'd love to go to Tennessee again. I'd love to go to Georgia. I've never been to Georgia Stadium. I'd love
to go to Alabama.
Ole Miss. Hoity-toity. Good gosh almighty. I mean, they'd say the Grove is one of the best college atmospheres in the country. They party like they don't care if they lost 59-0. Them still drunks out there, right?
Yeah.
So who wouldn't want to go to that? So absolutely. My heart says, yes, I want to be in the SEC because those are the brands I would love Florida State to be playing. But, man, that ESPN thing is real.
Yeah.
I just can't stand ESPN. I refuse. If I don't have to watch ESPN outside of, like, I need to see something, I don't watch it. I don't do anything with it anymore since the snub. But I also understand that if you're going to get in bed with the SEC, you got to get in bed with the ESPN.
Yeah, and let me just make clear that we're not saying that Ohio State doesn't throw down at a tailgate
Correct.
And have an amazing atmosphere. We're not saying, look, the Big House is on my bucket list.
Yes, it is.
A whiteout is on my bucket list. I'd love to go to Austin out in Oregon. I would love that. I would love to go to a USC game in the Coliseum. Yeah. I've been to the Rose Bowl, but not the Coliseum. So there's things that I'd like to see. I just think with the SEC versus the Big Ten, I think your top tier brands are neck and neck, right?
Yeah,
for sure. But it's the mid-tier to lower brands
that are cool as well.
It's not a comparison when you talk about the Big Ten to the SEC. And again, a lot of that has to do with being raised in the South and where most Florida State fans reside. And you know, again, and it's more of the being available, able to make the trip easily, not having to jump on a plane and spend thousands of dollars to go out to some of these places to get to the Big Ten games. I mean, you know, I go to the Georgia Florida tailgate every single year because my wife's a Georgia fan and my family does RV City and all that stuff. And I look forward to that every single year, man. Even if I don't like both teams, I just go for the fun, you know, but it's like, those are the things. And you know, we drive down there and you can take your RV down there and do all that type of stuff. That's what makes it so fun. So that's our opinion. Let us know if you're watching on YouTube, what your comment in the comments, what your opinion is on that. But the last thing I want to talk about here, we got a couple more quick things to wrap show up with. Here's some Doak Campbell updates. Obviously, guys, we know the transformation of Doak Campbell Stadium is underway. It is supposed to be done they're making good progress. They got a ways to go, but they're making good progress. Supposed to be done by the time the Alabama game kicks off. The latest rumors or rumblings, I guess it's not rumors anymore, is that there will be also new video boards added in Doak, which is nice. Look, man, I don't care what they do with the whole stadium. They could paint it pink for all they want. The Wi-Fi better be on point by the time we get here.
Brother, you are preaching right now.
Michael Alford, if you're listening, you can spend $300 billion on the stadium. But daggone it, we need some Wi-Fi up in that joint. Because I think I tried to post like a picture of me at a game in 2023, and I think the season was over by the time it went through. It went through when we were in the ACC championship, and like the home opener. So that I think is something that you want to talk about fan experience. I know we're there to watch the game, but man, it would be nice to be able to check some scores, exactly, or, you know, fire off a tweet of either we're mad at DJU or, you know, we're happy about the win or whatever. You're either rage tweeting or happy tweeting.
Exactly. But I mean, they couldn't even call the brick guy when he threw that pass into the brick and broke it because they were still on the phone. It was still ringing because it hadn't got out of Doak Campbell because they ain't got no Wi-Fi.
You got dial up over there. So yeah, that needs to be fixed. But the new video board should be nice. We are going to take a look real quick if you're watching on YouTube at the final renderings that have been released here. And so it's a big change, man. It's going to look a lot different here. You can see some of the club section that they got over here. And man, I will say that there are some very mixed opinions on this, and we'll throw up another one here. Looking at some of the other changes, there are some very mixed opinions on these. Some people love it. Some people hate it. Yeah. Look, I get the angst about it, right? I get the people who got pushed out of their seats. My heart goes out to them that have had seats for a long time. I mean, I lost mine. I got moved over, and then, you know, hopefully we can move back this year. But that does stink, right? I get that. Yeah. I understand. I'm not a fan. I have mixed feelings on this, right? I'm not a fan of all of it. I don't love the club section behind the home bench. At least, thank goodness, it's behind the home bench. You're still going to leave, you know, all those seats behind the visitors bench so you can be loud and you know, heckle them and whatnot. I don't love all of that stuff, right? Because the Champions Club has been an eyesore since it opened. And so you just wonder if it's going to be a bunch of empty seats and things like that. That part I don't love. So I'm not 100% in favor of it, right? But I am in the boat that it needed to happen, right? The underbelly of Doak, the bathrooms at Doak. I mean, I felt like I needed a tetanus shot before I went to the game, right? Yeah. You know what I mean? It was terrible. You lean up against a post and all of a sudden, like, you got to go take a shower because it's just, it needed it, man. It needed it. It needed it to bring into, and you know, for me, it's like, I know they're also going to the mixed use facility argument too, where they're trying to do some things with Doak there. And my point of reference, because most of you guys know I live around Charlotte, is Panther Stadium. Right. And even then, Panther Stadium is pretty old. They need to remodel it. But, like, you know, I went to a Luke Combs concert there a couple of years ago, and you see 60,000 people in this concert two nights in a row. Imagine how much revenue they're bringing in off of that, you know, just from the drink sales and all that stuff and the ticket purchases that they're getting a percentage of. So it's smart for them to want to be able to use Doak other than just 7 Saturdays a year and then sits there doing nothing, collecting, you know, making no revenue. So it's smart. These things are going to play into that. I understand all that argument. I'm still, you know, I'm a purist at heart. It's all about, you know, cramming Doak full of 80,000 fans. I can say personally, I've been at, I think, two of the biggest three crowds, the 2011 Oklahoma game and 2013 Miami. I think that's like two of the biggest three. I think Notre Dame was one. I think you were there for that one.
I was there for that one.
You know, we've both been at the Mecca of Doak, and it's amazing. It's awesome. But I think, you know, when you talk about capacity, because I think this is really where you get people's, you know, pants in a wad here, is reducing capacity. It's supposed to be high 60s, low 70s, somewhere around there when it all shakes out. And it was around 84,000, 83,000, you know, renovation there. The biggest thing, man, is you got to take care of the product on the field, right? Yeah. Because everyone wants a 90,000 seat stadium. I'm with you. I wish we had 100,000 screaming Florida State fans every single Saturday. That would be great. Look, Tallahassee is a long way away, right? And I saw a really cool, I wish I had put it up on the show, but it was a population density map of the state of Florida. And it's Tallahassee's on an island, right?
Yes, it is.
It's hard to get to. And when the team's not good, you're not selling 70,000 tickets, let alone 80, 90,000. So, I mean, 6 out of 7 home games in 23 were sold out because you were great. 5 out of 7 in 2022, I believe, were sold out. But in 2024, man, I literally tried to give tickets away, and I couldn't give them away.
Yep.
Before that, we went years. I think it was like 2016 to 2022 before we had our first sellout.
Again.
So, I mean, I get the capacity argument, but do you want 80,000 with 20,000 empty seats, or do you want 69,000, 70,000 packed out every single Saturday? So, I love some of it. I understand the arguments. I don't like some of it. I understand those arguments. But overall, man, I think it's going to be a much bigger, it's going to be a much better experience for Florida State fans at Doak. I can't wait to experience it. Last year, aside from the product on the field, it was just not a great experience, man. You know, with the music and the video boards were glitching and all this stuff. It wasn't great. So I'm excited to see it. One more thing before I throw it up to you. Let's look at some progress on the football-only facility as well, because Again, we talk about Florida State's investment.
Look at that baby.
We talk about the investment in the program from a realignment perspective. You know, this is where it's coming along here. For those of you watching on YouTube, you can see it looks about maybe half-ish way done.
Oof, look at that.
It looks beautiful, man. It's supposed to be done soon. I can't wait to see it.
I'm finding my way in that building somehow.
Yeah, we're sneaking in, man. Like, I can climb a fence now. I got to bring me a yellow vest and a hard hat.
That's right.
Over there. But it looks good.
Stop at
man.
Walmart real quick. Yeah,
exactly.
It looks great.
I can't wait. I'll just bring me a sledgehammer and go over there and act like I'm doing something. I can't wait to see this, man, because I think this is really just going to elevate where your football program is at. So give me some thoughts on the facilities and the Doak updates and all that type of stuff.
Yeah, I mean, the facilities, I mean, I'm so excited about that football only facility. We've been talking about that dadgum thing for so long.
Yes.
I mean, Jimbo literally left the program because he couldn't get the funding for one. And and then Willie Taggart committed $1 million towards it and then got fired for it.
Yeah.
And then Mike Norvell committed money towards it. And then he almost got fired for it.
Yeah.
So it's so great that we finally see this thing come to fruition. It's going to be beautiful. I'm with you. I'm stopping by Walmart, get me a hard hat, a yellow vest, some Timberlands and some dirty jeans. And I'm acting like I work there. I'm trying to get inside that thing. It looks beautiful. And I'm a purist. Okay. And Jesse, let me see if this makes sense to you. And I'll try to be short. You know, it's almost a conversation of, is it the chicken or the egg that comes first? And here's what I mean by that. Florida State is reducing its capacity because over time, what we found is that Tallahassee is difficult to get to. The product on the field hasn't been great in the last 10 years, right? We've had half good seasons, half bad seasons, right? Florida State, unlike any other university in the country, doesn't have most of its fandom living right there in its city. Even though it is Tallahassee, most of it's because it's a pure college town. If you've never been there before, if you're a Noel fan, you've never been to Tallahassee, it's pure college town. Literally, when FSU is out, that city is almost empty. It all just almost dies out. And most of its fans are driving in 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 hours. Jesse, how long's your drive? 7 hours, right?
7 hours.
That's 4 hours for me from Orlando there. People are coming from Miami. People coming from Gainesville. People coming from Naples. I mean, it's a long drive to get in there. So when the product is not as good and you could stay home on your comfy couch with the internet and your video board, aka your big screen 85-inch TV and your drinks and all your family and all right there, and you don't have to drive and spend all that money, yeah, for sure. Of course, we're going to stay home. But when Florida State is rocking, whoo, it's easy to fill that stadium up. And I'm a purist. Man, I remember that Notre Dame game, 83,000 strong. Gosh, what a game. Woo. Oklahoma, probably one of the greatest environments ever in Florida State history at Doak Campbell Stadium that you were at in 2011. Man, they still talk about that game, even though we lost it. Man, that moment when it was third down and they're backed up in their end zone and they get like, what, 3 straight false starts?
Yeah. Yeah.
But what is it, Jesse? I guess my bigger question is it the product on the field that will draw people in, which will then force Florida State? I mean, because if the demand is high, then it's going to force Florida State to raise the demand, which means adding more seats back into the stadium. But if the demand is low, it makes sense why they're decreasing the supply.
Right. Right. And I think the one thing that is important to mention too, when you talk about decreased capacity here, is that some of this was not because of the remodel and adding the club. Some of this was ADA compliance.
That's right.
You had, look, man, times have changed. Like, we love fried foods and sweet tea in the South. Them 12-inch seat spaces, they weren't cutting it, right? You had to lap it up at Doak sometimes.
That's right.
So them expanding these seats to, like, I think it's 18 inches now.
Yep.
Hey, I'm okay with giving up about 5,000 seats if it means that I love Noel Nation, right? I love you. I love you guys. But, man, we got to get up close and personal.
Sick of your belly being on me.
It's August. You better be wearing some deodorant down at this game, right? So, like, that's all I'm saying is I don't normally sit down most of the game anyway. I'm just that guy. But some of this had to happen, right? But I do agree, man. And so to raise capacity, you're going to have to add on to Doak. And
that's
a whole nother conversation because you're going to have to add like another deck or some end zone bleachers or something like that. And so, you know, I think if you can get to where you can consistently sell the stadium out,
Yeah.
Then maybe you look at expanding things. And maybe that comes when you go to the Big Ten or the SEC. That comes when you're bringing in those big brands and those big matchups. Maybe that's something that you can explore at that point. But right now, in its current state, I just think, you know, having it around 70,000, having a great experience for people that they can be happy with, I think that's the big conversation. Because like you said, man, HDTVs are cheap nowadays.
That's right.
I got my own air conditioning. I got my own cooler at the house and all that type of stuff. So if you're going to want people to come out, you got to give them a reason to come out. And that's big. And I did find, I want to throw this up real quick. Just to spend 2 seconds on this. I just thought this map was really cool. I saw it on Twitter. Shout out to whoever put this out on Twitter. This is the population density of Florida. Look at all this in Miami and in Orlando and over here in Tampa. Look at this little, if you can see on YouTube, look at this little tiny little section here over towards the Tallahassee area.
Yeah.
It's a long way away that you have to try and get these people to come watch games. And man, I think if you can consistently sell the stadium out, giving them a great experience, then man, I think that's the way to go. And then if you get to where you consistently sell these tickets out, then okay, let's look at doing some expansion, right? I just can't wait to see it. That's all I'm going to say is I just can't wait to see it. Last year was just a terrible experience all the way around. I just can't wait to see it. So that's really going to be it for the dope conversation. The last thing I want to talk about real quick, because I don't want to run you guys too long, is just some spring updates real quick coming out of camp. Not a whole lot that I want to report on there because, again, it's closed and it's just coach speaking, all that stuff. But some injury reports that I want to bring to you guys. This is getting concerning, right? It's a little worrisome out here. We already know that Shaheem Brown, Conrad Hussey, Gunnar Hansen, Jalen Early, and Jason Jenkins were going to miss all of spring. None of it believed to run into the fall. And none of the names I'm about to name are going to believe to be running into the fall. But you can add Jacob Rizzi, Edwin Joseph, Daniel Lyons, Caleb LaValle, and potentially LaWayne McCoy. I've heard he may miss all of it or part of it or some of it to that list. Man, this is... It's great that none of it's believed to be in the fall. But my question is, man, like, is this a sign that practice has become more physical? Because that's something we wanted. And when your physical injuries happen, and I hope that's what this is, because daggone it, Florida State can't catch a break on some injuries here, man. This has just been rough the last couple of years. And I know people are starting to have conversations about the strength and conditioning staff. I'm not really there to like say anything negative about Coach Storms and them when you talk about what happened in 2023 and with the draft and all the guys that really showed out at the combine. We were just bulling over teams in the fourth quarter. I think they're a great strength and conditioning staff. But daggone, man, these injuries are mounting up. And then you also look at the pro day, and it was pretty abysmal, right? And it is what it is. It's hard to say. I think Darius Washington did 16 reps on 225. That's not good. Mm-hmm. And so, man, I don't know what it is. I'm not here to assume one way or the other, but man, it's either that speaks to the type of athletes that you had that we got to get past that, or maybe practice is just becoming more physical. But that's the injury updates, and so we're just gonna have to keep our eye on it, man. The spring rolls around.
Yeah. I mean, it's not really sure, you know, if it's a, you know, strength and conditioning training, you know, if they are more physical, which is, like you said, we've been begging for it. We've been wanting it. And that's great. But at the same time, we also need players. So, you know, you can't have a spring if you ain't got no players. Everybody's on the injured list. So, you know, they're going to have to weigh that. Mike Norvell is going to, you know, now that he's more in that CEO role, you know, hopefully he'll take a look at that. And again, you know, I love Coach Storms, but you know, we're seeing some back-to-back things that are concerning that I think Mike Norvell needs to really evaluate that strength and conditioning program. Come on, man. If we're going to try to get into these big time conferences, especially the SEC, man, we're going to need SEC like strength and conditioning. So hopefully that they'll be able to figure that out, but you know, at least none of those injuries, at least from what I understand, are going to keep them away from preseason practices. Yep. They should be back by the time the fall rolls around. So it won't be detrimental in that way.
Yeah, I think really the biggest concern for me is when you talk about a guy like Edwin Joseph and Daniel Lyons that were two younger guys that don't have a ton of playing time. They played a lot last year, but not a ton, that I think are going to be, if not starters, the number two guy like Daniel Lyons. I think Edwin Joseph probably be your starting corner coming into the fall. I think Daniel Lyons is going to be one of your top two defensive tackles. So that's one where it's like these guys needed the spring, right? And then Gunnar Hansen, that's going to probably be your starting tackle. Jason Jenkins was a guy that we were looking at starting at defensive end. Raheem Brown, obviously, a starting safety. So that's the concern, is you have guys that were critical at starters at positions that are going to miss time. And so that's really my biggest concern. But we'll watch how it plays out over spring and going into fall. A lot of this could just be precautionary stuff. We don't know. Florida State doesn't really release injury news other than they're in, they're out, and that's about it.
That's right.
But that's going to do it for today's show, guys. Thought we had a lot to cover here. I know we ran you a little bit long, but you know how me and Michael do. We ain't talked in a little bit. So we when we get on the mic, we just love talking about it. So we appreciate you guys watching. If you enjoy this content, drop a like and subscribe. Still working on closing in on that 2,000 subscribers. We're getting closer by the day, so we would appreciate that. Rate and review on the podcast helps us reach other Noel fans. Make sure that you check out plantthespear.com for all of our written content, videos. Everything is over there. It's a great asset for you guys. We've got baseball previews and recaps and all this kinds of stuff, so make sure you check that out. As always, guys, we appreciate you watching. We'll catch you on the next one, and go Noles.
Go Noles. We'll be right back.